Hi, thank you for coming this morning. As Patrick said, my name is Tom Limoncelli. I'm a Google SRE, which is what we call system administrators at Google. And today, I'll be talking about Ginetti, the virtual cluster manager. The format of my talk, I'll be talking about virtualization in general first, then Ginetti in specific, talk about some of its benefits, and then internals. And if we have time, I'll be doing a demo. So let's talk about virtual machines. How many people here use some kind of virtualization? Awesome, almost everybody. And you know, when I first started using virtualization, my first experience actually was some commercial VM product on my desktop, and it was so exciting to have a little virtual machine running on my machine. And if you think that's fun, running a cluster is even more fun. A cluster is when you have a lot of physical machines and many, many, many virtual machines. And you have lots of exciting features. You can move virtual machines around the cluster for load balancing and other purposes. And if you're a system administrator for this, for a large virtual cluster, there's a lot of tasks that you need to do. Creating VMs, starting and stopping them, moving them around the cluster, and all of these are multi-step processes. And it can be a lot of work. So you really want to have some kind of software that can mitigate the work. Now, a traditional virtualization cluster very often uses a SAN and looks something like this. The benefits of virtualization, as you probably know, since so many people here have experience with it, cost savings, you know, server consolidation. Servers nowadays are so fast that often you don't need a whole one just for, you know, a service. So being able to have three or four servers on one machine is very convenient. Faster desktop or service deployment, being able to spin up a virtual machine very quickly is nice. And all sorts of totally new things like virtual appliances and ephemeral machines, short-lived machines, which is something you can't really do with physical hardware. The biggest surprise to me was that it made qualifications easier. So when we have a new software package or a new version of a software package, we have to test it first on all of our different hardware platforms. So, you know, there might be 10 different revisions of hardware in a data center, and that's a lot of work. But with virtualization, we qualify that software under the virtual machine, and once that's done, that virtual machine is presented to the software no matter what physical hardware it is. So, you know, it might be an HP or a Dell or a big Dell or a small Dell, but what the software sees is the Zen virtual machine. Now, traditionally, SANs, traditionally people set up large clusters with a SAN and commercial software, and this tends to be very soft, very expensive. And I'm kind of cheap. Now, actually, I just joined the Ginetti project a couple years ago. It's been around for about seven. And Ginetti seeks to fix a lot of these problems. It's a cost and the difficulty of managing a large cluster. The essence of Ginetti is that it enables you to manage a whole cluster as one entity instead of as each individual physical machine or virtual machine. It was originally designed for internal use at Google, and what I mean by that is not our external facing web properties. So when you do a Google search, you're not hitting machines running Ginetti. Where is Ginetti used within Google? Things like our internal DNS servers. And if a developer needs needs a small machine for an internal little website or something, they might request a virtual machine. They get a Ginetti virtual machine and are able to do their work. The other fundamental idea of Ginetti was to abstract away the low-level details. You shouldn't have to think about the details of storage and CPUs and network IP addresses and everything. You should just say, give me a virtual machine. And if Ginetti is configured with Zen, it does the right thing. If it's configured with KVM, it does the right thing. So it's been around for about 6 years. It's been open source for just a couple years. Some of the primary features are, as I mentioned or alluded to, we support both Xen and KVM. It has kind of a plug-in architecture, so it can manage lots of different technologies. The storage infrastructure is also a plug-in, and we currently support file-based storage or LVM, as well as DRDB. We'll talk more about that later. Has some nice utilities, like if you have a power outage, it remembers the state of which virtual machines are supposed to be up, which are down, where are they. So if you lost power, when your cluster comes back, all your virtual machines get restarted as appropriate. The Oregon Open Source Lab uses Ginetti, and they have an interesting blog post about a power outage they had. And he said, you know, power comes back, and he thought, oh, great, I'm going to spend all day bringing up all these virtual machines. What a pain. And he logs into the server, and he sees this process running called Ginetti Watcher, and it's bringing up this and bringing up that. And he just watched it, and 10 minutes later, the whole thing was back up. He's like, wow, thank God we installed Ginetti. It handles live migration and reboot migration, non-live migration. Small clusters and large clusters. Originally, we were using on clusters that were just two or three machines, but you can have a cluster that's just one machine for development or 100 physical machines in a big cluster. We have some experimental features, like we're experimenting with plugins for other virtualization technologies, other storage technologies, and taking advantage of IPMI for physical management. A little bit of trivia, it's open source under GPL v2. Most of it's written in Python. The core is, and a lot of the utilities are in Python. There's some utilities written in Haskell, which those are the utilities related to space allocation. The entire stack is open source. We tried to do as little work as possible. We wanted to leverage other projects. So we leveraged DRDB, we leveraged Xen. So when people say, can it do such and such a feature, usually the answer is, well, can Xen do that? Because we're just managing Xen. It's prepackaged for Debian, Ubuntu, Gentoo, and a couple others. And the project is a very mature project with a mature, you know, good developer hygiene. We have a code style guide. We have a testing process, continuous build, a very structured release process, new features. We write up designs, present them to the open source community for feedback, and before we implement them. At the bottom, there's the URL to the project. Now, I mentioned that I joined Ginetti team recently, about 3 years ago, and the first thing that I noticed was that the terminology of every virtualization system ever made, everyone seems to have slightly different terminology, and Ginetti is similar. The two terms that you need to know to understand the rest of this talk are that a node means a physical machine, and an instance means a virtual machine. Let me give you a little mnemonic to help you memorize them. So a node is, my mnemonic is that node is like a node in the networks, and networks are physical things generally, so that's how I remember node. And VM, my mnemonic is that, well, an instance begins with the letter I. VMs are kind of imaginary. They're like in the, you know, brain of the computer. So, you know, they're imaginary, kind of like Santa Claus, okay? I hope I didn't ruin something for anybody. So, as I mentioned before, traditionally storage in a traditional VM system, you use a SAN for your storage. And it looks a little something like this. So if you create a virtual machine, first the system would allocate a little storage out of your SAN, then spin up the virtual machine, connect the storage to the virtual machine, and now you're running. If you ever want to move the virtual machine to another physical machine within the network, it goes through some kind of process where the storage is disconnected, the virtual machine is somehow migrated, either live or non-live, to the other physical machine, and then the storage is reconnected. Now, I mentioned before that Ginetti does not require a SAN to be used. In fact, we don't use SANs at all in our environment at Google. So how does it, where does it get its storage from? Well, it gets its storage from the local disks of the nodes. And here's how that works. So if you create a virtual machine, or tell Ginetti to create a virtual machine, it does all the, you know, creates the network allocations and stuff. It allocates storage out of your LVM on one node, spins up the VM, and connects them. And then for safety, it allocates an equal amount of space on another node and uses DRDB to create a RAID mirror between them. So we have RAID at the at a higher level. You can also put RAID on the servers, but you'll see why having RAID at this level is very important. So it's important because when you need to do live migration, your data has to be in two places, the place that you're migrating from and to. So when you tell Ginetti to migrate a virtual machine from one node to another, it uses Xen or KVM's functionality to migrate the virtual machine to the other node, and then it swaps the roles of the storage. The master and the slave, or, I'm sorry, primary and the secondary become the secondary and primary. And it does all of this for you automatically. If you're doing non-live migration, Now let's talk about a disaster scenario. Let's say that you're running in our configuration, your primary is node one and your secondary is node two, and the motherboard dies on node one, or you have some catastrophic failure. Well, the way we handle this situation is, well, first of all, So the motherboard dies, and the virtual machine goes away because, you know, it's imaginary, just in the brain of the computer. What Ginetti can do is restart the virtual machine on node two, and, restarts the virtual machine on node two. It has all the data because this RAID 1 mirror was keeping a copy in real time, and then Ginetti will automatically allocate storage on some other node and recreate that RAID mirror. And depending on how much disk space that is, you know, recreating a RAID mirror can take, you know, minutes to hours. But you're back up and running. So the building blocks of Ginetti's ability to move virtual machines around is based on two atoms. You have moving instance, either live or non-live. You can do it from the primary to the secondary. And the second kind of move is moving the secondary storage, where you detach the storage from one machine and reattach it on another and re-replicate. So let me explain why that's important. So with a SAN, you might be thinking, well, Tom, with a SAN, I can move a virtual machine between any two machines because my storage is kind of external to the cluster. But with Ginetti, your storage is on two machines, and you can only move a virtual machine between those two machines. So you might be asking, Tom, what do I do if I want to take a machine and move it, say it's on node one and two, and I want to move it to node three and four? Well, you can do it because, remember, we have these two different things that we can do. We can move, we can do a live migration between two nodes, and we can change where this, we can copy the secondary storage someplace else. So let's say, so how would we move from node one, two to three, four? Well, at the beginning, we have the primary at node one, and the secondary, the copy, the RAID mirror is on node two. So the first thing we would do is detach the storage from node two and reattach it on node three. It might take an hour to replicate the data, rebuild the mirror, but then once that's done, we can swap, we do live migration, which swaps which is which, and then we would detach the storage from here and reattach it to here, and now we're on node three and four. So It might take a little longer because you have to copy the data. That might take an hour or two, but you didn't spend a lot of money on a SAN. And SANs can be expensive. When Gennady started, SANs were a lot more expensive. I mean, what's the smallest SAN you can build? Or how much is that going to cost? Probably about $1 billion, right? And oh, I'm sorry, $2 billion, because you need redundancy. So, you know, we couldn't spend $2 billion on each, you know, cluster, so we had to invent this thing with that uses all the local disk. And that's good, because $2 billion, it's an awesome trade-off to just have to wait, you know, an hour or two for some of these migrations. And we don't migrate things too often. So we find no SAN, no problem, as long as you're willing to wait a little for big moves. That said, doing these moves is very simple. You just type a command like Gennady instance migrate and the name of the instance. Since there's only one place it can move, you don't have to specify where to move it, and it'll kind of seesaw it between its primary and secondary. So now we've talked about virtualization and Gennady. Let me talk about the benefits that I think are so awesome about virtualization in general and Gennady in specific. And I want to say these things because if you don't do virtualization because it's too expensive, I want you to consider trying Gennady because you can get started with just a couple machines and you don't have to buy a $2 billion SAN. So I've saved you $2 billion already. So why is this so awesome? Well, think about you're providing services to your user without Gennady. If a disk is failing, you have to power off the machine, clone the struggling disk to a new disk, assuming you don't have RAID. If you have RAID, it's a lot easier, but if you don't have RAID, you're going to have downtime, you're going to have upset users, and your users are going to say, could you do this, since it requires downtime, can you do this at like 4 a.m. on a Sunday? And that kind of sucks, but you know you end up doing it. And so now you're doing something that you don't like doing at a weird time, and you're not happy. And I don't like people being unhappy. With Gennady, if you notice that a disk has started to fail, you could do a live migration of the VMs to some other node, and then power off that dying machine, replace the disk, et cetera. And you can do that repair on your own time. You're not doing it Sunday at 4 a.m. You're doing it at a convenient time for you. Now, what if a disk dies with no warning? Just boom, dies. Of course, with RAID, it's much better. But when you're building large clusters, it's nice to save money on each node by not having to buy a RAID card. So with a normal server, you would spend your day doing a restore from backups. If they have backups, the user is crying on your shoulder. You have downtime. And the worst part of this scenario is that you're doing this restore kind of in panic mode. You know, the user's screaming, they want it now. And I don't know about you, but I don't work very well when I'm in panic mode. With Gennady, if a disk dies flat out, I can still live migrate the VMs to a different node and replace the disk. Because the way DRDB works, either disk can die and I'm still able to access the data. It might be slow if it's the other disk, but I'm still running. So users might see slow disk performance, but again, I'm replacing the bad disk on my time, on my schedule. What about a more complicated problem? Let's see. Well, actually, we saw this earlier. A motherboard dies. I don't know where I used to work. If motherboard died, they would be down for like a week while I try to get a replacement. And then they're complaining and they're begging, oh, don't you have some test hardware you can substitute for a little while? And we're doing this replacement in a rush. Again, I don't like rushing. With Gennady, I simply fail over the VM, restart it on its secondary node. All the user sees is a reboot. And a user much prefers a reboot to a couple days of downtime. Now, what if a user needs more RAM? This is something you can't do with a physical machine. Or with a physical machine, if a user needs more RAM, you power down the machine, you add the RAM, whatever. And they're going to ask you to do it at 4 a.m., and I don't like working at 4 a.m., but that's their maintenance window. With Gennady, I type this command, allocate more RAM to the machine, I reboot their instance, and the users think I'm a magician, especially because I can do this from the beach. So to recap, without Ginetti, downtime becomes a live migration. Long outages become a reboot, and things that are often an off-hour task become a reboot or something I can do during the week. Now, why is this important to me? You know, you might know me as Tom the Sysadmin, you might know me as the time management guy. Everything in this book, every technique in this book fits into one of three categories. Ginetti doesn't help you with the first category. I'm not going to talk about it. But these two other categories, Ginetti really helps you. So category two is stop being interrupt-driven. Be more scheduled and planned. And category three is don't do things you don't have to do. Automate. Well, Ginetti is all about, or has enabled me to be more scheduled in my work, less interrupt-driven, emergency-driven, and very automated. Not only is Ginetti automating the things that I might do manually in the past, but it has an API so that I can program it. And in fact, almost everything we do where I work, if we do it manually once or twice, we then are automating it and using the API. So to me, Ginetti is my new cool time management software. So enough plugs. Let's talk about some Ginetti internals. There's two ways of accessing Ginetti. You have command line tools, GNT dash, and it's kind of a category, cluster, node, or instance, subcommands. I'll show you some commands in the future. Or you can talk through the API. The API, it's a RESTful API. It's secured with SSL certificates. Everything you can do from the command line, you can do from the API, except like one or two super dangerous things that you don't want to do from an API anyway, like turning off the cluster. One node is designated to be the master, so it has essentially a VIP, a virtual interface, and if the master node goes down and you have to move the master to another node, it inherits the VIP. So you have one stable IP address that you can always connect to. You can put in DNS and you can use that to connect to the cluster, and you're always talking to the master node, the node that accepts commands and delegates tasks throughout the cluster. Each node is running the node daemon, and that takes commands from the master and executes them. So you can think of the master as the conductor of the orchestra. There's also the Ginetti Watcher, which I mentioned before. This runs every 5 minutes and checks various things about your system and fixes a lot of different problems. For example, if an instance is down but is marked as should be up, it'll try to restart it. So that's how the recovery from a power failure works. But it also means that if someone halts a machine or it crashed and can't restart or didn't restart automatically, Ginetti Watcher will bring it back to life. There's a number of different ways of configuring Ginetti, kind of a small, medium, and large. Small configuration is a single node. Usually this is what you do as a developer. It's much more interesting once you have two nodes and go to the medium configuration, because now you have DRDB activated and you can do migrations. The medium configuration is pretty good. It scales to about 40 physical machines. If you're going bigger than that, you start hitting problems because there's a global lock. Not that, the global lock slows things down. Not that your VMs run more slowly, but you're often sitting there waiting for the lock. So the lock might be held as you're creating an instance. That might take a couple minutes. You've typed a command that should happen quickly, but you're waiting for this lock to clear. You're waiting a couple minutes for the instance to finish building. So what we did to scale Ginetti to very large situations is we came up with this huge configuration model, which is where each group of nodes is in what we call a node group, and there is a lock per node group that makes the locking more granular. With huge configurations, you can easily go to 100, 120 physical machines. And this is the configuration we're currently using at Google. We tend to get our machines a rack of 20 or 40 at a time, And so each rack, we make a node group. Here's just a diagram showing the different daemons and things that are running on a minimal cluster. And then if you add a node, each node is running certain things. One of them is running the master daemon because it's the master. And dir2b is now doing replication. In the huge configuration, each group of nodes is in a rack. Node migrations tend to happen within a group, and moving a node between groups is a kind of a special function. So another place to use this configuration is if you need to restrict migrations to certain nodes. So Xen and KVM only support live migration between very similar processors. So if you have five machines that are a particular Intel chip and five machines that are like an AMD chip, and Xen doesn't support migration between those two different architectures, you might have two different groups, one Intel, one AMD. So how big is big? When we first invented Gennetti, we only needed it to manage clusters that were three or four machines. So scaling out didn't matter too much to us. We were using it for small clusters all around the world. Then we started putting it in data centers and needed it to scale to 20 machines, 40 machines, 100 machines. So over the years, we've done a lot of scalability work. We're now, Gennetti 2.7 will be shipping soon. 2.6 is very capable of handling 100 physical nodes. Like I said before, the software doesn't break. VMs don't run any slower. It's just your commands might be stuck behind someone else's lock. At Google, we are using it mostly for virtualizing Linux servers. What we deploy currently is Xen. We do have test clusters that use KVM, because we have a big continuous test process. So everything is tested under Xen and KVM before we release a new version. We're using just standard off-the-shelf x86 hardware. We used to have a mixture of 32-bit and 64-bit. Now we're all 64-bit. Our operating system that we're using for the DOM 0, the physical machines, is basically a very stripped-down Debian. And we tend to use paravirtualization mode. For you Xen people who might be wondering, we use paravirtualized mode. We have certain clusters that use HVM for users that need it, which is mostly Windows and a couple other obscure operating systems. Within Google, we use all the open source components. We've also invented a number of internal tools that have not been open source. They probably won't be open source because they are the glue between our Gennetti clusters and Google infrastructure that no one else has, like our provisioning or cost accounting systems. The way we use Gennetti is generally two use cases. We have large clusters in data centers and small clusters in offices. So the large clusters in data centers is for our self-service machine requests. So any developer in the company can request a machine, they get it in a couple minutes. We have a nice little web front end for that. We've consolidated these to just a couple different data centers, but many machines in each of those data centers. The configuration we use in our offices is a smaller configuration. Each office, and Google has about 150 offices, each office has a little Gennetti cluster, and it's used for local services like DNS, LDAP, various caches. And that's really nice because, like I said before, if you have 150 of these clusters around the world, you can't spend $2 billion on each one of them. And it's very nice. But not only is it a cost thing, without Gennetti, we would have considered putting a SAN in each of these offices. Some of these offices are like, five people. And I mean, I exaggerate with the $2 billion, but even an inexpensive SAN, it's hard to justify for a little sales office in some small country with three salespeople. So we probably wouldn't have gone with Gennetti or any virtualization at all, and we wouldn't have had all those benefits. But with Gennetti, We don't need a SAN. We have, OIB. This is our office in a box project. That's what we call the rack of servers that goes into each office. Literally in a box. We build the cluster, configure it at our headquarters, put it in a box, and ship it to the new office. And about a week or two before the office opens, some local person opens it up, plugs in power and network, and they're up and running. They're literally up and running because we have the subnet allocated to the build room in Mountain View when it's building. And while it's on the truck being shipped to the new sales office, our network people move that subnet to the new office. So we can configure it for the live IP addresses. But there's another aspect of why virtualization made the OIB projects such a success. Our services often are run by small teams. So we have a separate LDAP team, a separate DNS DHCP team, a separate web cache team. And if we had just one or two boxes with no virtualization, they would have all had to share those physical machines, which means if one needs libc upgraded and patched, we couldn't do that until everyone would agree to do that. And getting different teams to agree to a schedule like that is kind of difficult. If one team needed a reboot, getting all the other teams to agree to a reboot, that would be a real pain in the ass. And so we would have very unhappy teams. With virtualization, each service was put on a different virtual machine in the OIB. So each team could patch at their own schedule, reboot at their own schedule, much happier teams, much more cooperation. It's much easier to cooperate when you don't have to cooperate. So the way we organize our large data center installations is each cluster is engineered one of four different ways. We have four different ways that we engineer based on what kind of service are we providing in that cluster. Are we providing for services that need low latency, or is this a desktop replacement, or general services, or batch processing? So our four different configurations, it's basically what kind of network architecture is behind them, and how much we oversubscription we do on the network and the virtual CPUs and stuff. But we have four basic configurations. Each cluster is one of those four. The other thing we do, and this is a best practice I recommend if you're going to take this large, is each cluster is designated in one of three maintenance windows. And our guarantee to our users is that if we have to do just disruptive maintenance, if we have to take down the network, for example, to upgrade to some switch, our guarantee is that we'll never do destructive maintenance on more than one maintenance window at a time. So our users know this, and if they need super uptime, they will request an instance in maintenance window A and another one in maintenance window B. And that way, they can be assured that at least one of them will always be up. This has been very important. Recently, we had a kernel upgrade that required a reboot. And sometimes we'll do these reboots by migrating machines off one node, rebooting it, migrating. We do this rolling reboot where we keep migrating machines off the next machine that will be rebooted. But due to some compatibility issues, we had to shut down all the instances, reboot, and bring everything back up. And because we had these maintenance windows, our users weren't super happy, but at least they had a structured way of knowing that their redundant machines wouldn't all be down at the same time. We implement all of this through tagging. Just like on Flickr, you can tag photos. You can put tags on clusters, physical nodes, and virtual machines. And all of our utilities read these tags and make different decisions. So for example, a typical cluster tag might be mate:A, which means it's in maintenance window A. Or we have another tag that means this virtual machine. So we have a tag you'd put on a virtual machine, which means don't put me on the same physical machine as other machines with this tag. So for example, our DNS team might have three DNS servers in a cluster. They don't want any two of them on the same physical node because they want physical diversity for disaster recovery purposes, so they'll put that same tag on all of their DNS servers, and our load balancing system will allocate their instances as they desire. So I mentioned earlier that we've developed a number of internal tools that we use. Let me talk about that. We have a lot of things that integrate in our internal monitoring system. We have a homegrown monitoring system. But we've added, we have some tools, Virgil, Dratus, and Euripides. It's not important what each of them does, but essentially it's a web front end and sort of a high level, fleet level command and control system. Dratus is kind of a configuration management tool, and Euripides is our workflow for repairs. So Euripides keeps track of which machines are in what process of a repair. There's also, a community growing around Ginetti, and they're making tools also. So the Oregon Open Source Lab has a project called the Ginetti Web Manager, which is a really nice web front end. So if you don't like the command line, you could do everything from the website. Anyway, back to our internal tools. So I'm going to describe how we do repairs of dead machines or disks or whatever in our environment. So before I explain this, I should point out Google does repairs in a kind of a weird way. You know, I'm in the New York office, and our data centers are all around the world. I've never physically touched or even seen any of the machines that I'm responsible for. We have technicians in the data centers that are our remote hands. So the way I repair a machine is I make sure it's ready to go to repairs, like, you know, I copy any data off of it or move any virtual machines off of it. Then I mark in a database, this machine needs repairs, and halt the machine. Then I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and I keep checking the database, and then someone else marks that database entry as this machine is done being repaired, and that means it's all done. I can load the operating system and continue from there. So it's kind of like having, someone once made the analogy to having Oompa Loompas, but I say our data center techs are super Oompa Loompas. Anyway, and since this is being recorded, I'm sure I'll get in trouble for that, but they're awesome. They are some of the best people I've worked with. Okay, so how do we handle a machine failure? Let's say this machine dies. Our monitoring system notices that and alerts Ginetti, which sends a command to Virgil saying, hey, this machine's dead. Evacuate all the virtual machines off of it. It uses some tools to evacuate all the virtual machines off of it and then marks the machine in the machine database as needs repair. At that point, we just sit around and wait. Later, so that's how we send a machine to repair. Now I'm going to talk about how we re-assimilate a machine once it comes back from repairs. So Euripides and our monitoring system is waiting for, or detects that the machine was repaired in the machine database. Now, you would think we would want to re-add this machine to the cluster right away. We actually don't. What we do is we wipe and reinstall the operating system, and then we just let it sit there for 24 hours being monitored. If no problems appear in that 24 hours, then we assume, okay, they must have done the repair correctly, and then we add it to the cluster. And the way we add it back to the cluster is, essentially, Euripides tells Virgil to run the re-add system. Virgil tells Dratus to reconfigure the machine, do the config management for it, and it gets re-added to the cluster. And then we rebalance the cluster. So rebalance is an algorithm we have that tries to put basically an equal number of instances, well, proportionally, on each machine. So other internal tools, we have a console that gives visualization to all the repair processes and what's been repaired recently and stuff. We have this rolling reboot tool, which we hope to open source soon. This is if you need to do, if you need to reboot every machine in a cluster for like a kernel upgrade, this does it all for you. It evacuates a machine, reboots it, evacuates the next machine, reboots it. We also have a number of capacity planning tools. This lets you kind of simulate a cluster and simulate creating instances and stuff and calculate how many instances would fit on a cluster. This is what our capacity planners and project managers use. Okay. Okay, so here's a bunch of URLs. As I mentioned before, the project is totally open source, and we're building a community around it. For the last couple years, well, originally we didn't do a lot of marketing around Kinetti, but for the last couple years we have, and we're finding people are coming out of the woodwork that use it. I mean, I mentioned the Oregon Open Source Lab, the Greece Research Network has a huge Kinetti implementation. I was giving this talk at a user group recently. Someone from the UN came up to me and told me about their cluster that's, I believe, one of the relief organization uses. The Park Slope Food Co-op uses it. People keep sending us emails saying, oh yeah, you know, we've been using it for a while. And it's a very stable project. Like I mentioned before, we have a lot of good discipline in our development process. And it's an open project. If you use Kinetti, and we encourage you to contribute to the project. And we need assistance with writing features, fixing bugs, writing documentation. So the last thing I'd like to do is a demo. And let me take a minute to get this set up. Oh, okay, there we go. So right now I've SSH'd into a cluster that runs three Kinetti nodes. Kinetti node list shows me those three nodes. You see their names, very creatively named, node 1, 2, and 3. How much disk space they have, how much free disk space they have, how much memory they have, free memory. And if you notice, P instance, the number of primary instances, there's one instance, its primary is on node 2, and its secondary is on node 1. I can get more information about this, Kinetti instance info. The name of the instance is, actually, let's Kinetti instance list to see our list of instances. So here's its name, INST1, the hypervisor it's running on, the database template that's being used, and that it's primary is node 1. Okay. If I do Kinetti instance info, then this command will give just dump a huge amount of information about the instance. I want to point out that if you notice I'm pressing tab, Kinetti comes with a bash tab completion file, so you can even do tab completion on the subcommands. If you notice I typed in tab. Also, the completion works on machine names, so I can type itab. And here's all the information about the node. It scrolled off, but some important stuff is some of the hypervisor parameters. Has one virtual CPU allocated to it, how much RAM, virtual NIC, and that in DRDB, its primary is on node 1, and its RAID mirror is on node 2. So one useful thing we can do, let's see, Kinetti, oops, instance list. Let's migrate this machine from one node to another. Actually, now it wouldn't be a fun demo if something didn't go wrong. Okay. And here's this window. Okay, so this window is actually running on that instance. And if I do top, uh, how do I say how frequently to update? Is it 01? What?
I
one? Okay. Let's just do it. Okay. Oh, actually, I'll do. Oh, that's not a good demo. I'll just do top. Okay. So the instance is running. Let's put that down here. Ginetti instance migrate, instance one. And it says, are you sure? And so now, as you can see, in this window, it's still running. It's preparing the migration. During migration, so this virtual machine has a gigabyte of RAM. So it is now copying the entire RAM from one node to another. This is a particularly slow cluster, by the way. So this migration is going to take a minute or two. On the hardware I generally use, this takes 30 seconds to a minute. Anyway, it's now copying all the RAM from one of those from one physical machine to another. And then once that's done, it'll see what RAM has changed since that copying began, and it'll copy that delta. And then it'll see what RAM changed during that happening, and it'll copy that delta, and that delta, and that delta, until the delta is small enough that it can pause the machine, which is like, you know, sleep or suspend on your laptop, essentially. Copy the last bit of delta, copy all the CPU settings, you know, registers and stuff to the other machine, unsleep the machine, and it's migrated. That's, you know, built into Zen and KVM, and Ginetti will do the right thing for the right commands to make that happen. Ginetti is also manipulating the storage so that the primary and the secondary storage are swapping roles. It's moving network stuff. There we go. And the top was running the whole time. If you were a user, what you would have seen is just a slight performance reduction, because all that RAM's being copied, and then a less than a second blip as the machine is frozen and that last move happens. Our users generally don't notice that when we migrate. The only users that notice is the user that was running an NTP server. Because the machines use the clock of the physical machine underneath it, and the clock jumped. Okay, so now if we do Ginetti instance list, we see that its primary node is now 1, so it jumped from being on node 2 to node 1. And if we do Ginetti instance info, we'll see that everything is also moved. Oops. All of the Ginetti commands begin with GNT dash, either cluster or node or instance. Ginetti OS list, and they almost all have a subcommand that they almost all have subcommands info, list, and modify, and then they tend to have a lot more commands. So we could do Ginetti OS list, and these are our OS templates that are on this machine. If I do Ginetti node, press return, it lists what all the subcommands are. All the Ginetti commands are extremely helpful. We have huge man pages. We have documentation online if you run it without something. And even our bash completion stuff even works with all the flags. So let's, just my last demo, let's create a new instance. So here I'm doing Ginetti instance add. So we're going to add a new instance. Dash O is the operating system. So we're going to use an OS template called debootstrap plus default. Dash S is the size, so 1 gigabyte of disk. Dash B is the backend parameter. So we're saying memory is 1 gig. Dash T is the disk template to use. Dash I hail means which algorithm should we use for allocating this instance. We could specify, put this on node 3 and 2, and it'll put it on those exact nodes. Or you could say dash I hail, and it runs a plugin called hail, which is a kind of least loaded algorithm. Hail stands for, the HA is for Haskell, the I is the fact that this is the dash I command, and L, I can't remember what it stands for, but it's kind of a weird acronym. So let's create this instance. Now with the Ginetti Web Manager, you could do this all from the web. You would just fill out a form, essentially, that asks all those questions. You wouldn't have to know all these commands. But since this is Lisa, I'm showing you command line tools. So what it's doing is it's allocated the disk storage, and it's now wiping the disk. So we zero out the disk in case, just for security reasons. Disk is now created. Now it is running the instance. The OS template comes with a install script that runs. It's running that. This is going to run very slowly because of my test cluster here has very little RAM. And then once that's done, the instance will be available. Where does it figure all the networking? Good question. So the networking is in the configuration. You tell it a lot of the networking information. You have to create the DNS entry before you can create the instance because it's going to look up that to know what the IP address is. If you specify on the command line a MAC address, you can tell it what MAC address to use for the virtual machine, or if you don't specify it, it will invent a fake MAC address. It'll invent a fake MAC address for you, which is actually how we do it. Our automation lets it create the MAC address, and then we read that and stick it into our DHCP server later. Speaking of networking, you can configure your network different ways. Some people put their physical nodes and instances on the same subnet, but you can also put them on two separate networks. So we actually have a separate, the way we use it at Google is we have a VLAN just for the nodes, and then every like 240 virtual machines that we allocate, we put another class C on the instance network. And so each group of 200 virtual machines is on a different subnet, but they're all in the same cluster. It all just magically works. Other questions? Yes. Oh, actually, I need to ask everyone to go up to the mic, and I'm supposed to ask you to state your name and affiliation for your question. So that was Andrew Hume of AT&T with an awesome question. Thank you. And now you.
Colin Hicks, University of Edinburgh. One of my colleagues did some good work on a kind of similar cheap small cluster concept. There's, I think, two big differences that are worth mentioning from ours that I'll ask you about. One, after using Dr. Beedy, and we exported those disks over iSCSI, so we got that kind of migration behavior without moving the disks around. Mm-hmm. The second is that he did a lot of work with Pacemaker, so a lot of the migrations and so on happen under the control of Pacemaker, triggered by external events.
Okay, so, and this was with some other system, and so is your question, can we do that with Ginetti?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first question was, could you use a SAN and...
Not a SAN, we're still using DRBD.
Yes.
And but instead of using the disks locally, we bind them together and then export that resulting rated mm-hmm. pair over iSCSI to the
Oh, okay.
The
so
guest.
you were using DRDB on the iSCSI end and importing the iSCSI
into the guest.
LUN
yes.
into the guest. We don't support that currently, but you could whip that together in an afternoon of adding. It would require like one or two hooks and a new data storage template.
Yeah, actually, we're probably more interested in Ceph these days, but I was wondering if there was a reason you hadn't done it, if it just didn't perform well or
I think when the project started, we didn't have iSCSI.
All right, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I think this is just simpler, and we, I mean, you would think that this would be this huge burden that every time you move instances around that you're copying all this data. We really don't move things around very much.
Yeah, the second part means that we, I say we, but not really we, pacemaker moves things sometimes.
Ah, okay. So is pacemaker like a heartbeat kind of
yeah.
thing? Okay. So, yes. So some things that are still manual is if a physical machine dies, you have to manually tell Ginetti to revivify the VMs on the secondary. And that is still manual because we're trying to avoid split brain issues. We're actually drafting some designs of automating that. The way we've automated it, Ginetti, we have an external monitoring system that notices this and does the right thing. Doing that within the cluster requires like a Paxos algorithm or something, and we're working on that. The other thing is if the master dies, you have to manually pick another node and tell it to become the master, and it does the right thing. Actually, there's an election, and then it happens. And the reason that that's manual also is because of problems that you have if you don't use Paxos. And so we're actually looking at, in the current beta, there is some experimental stuff that uses Linux HA to move the master automatically.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, in back.
Ray Yip, Sony Gaikai. Two questions. One's related to what he was talking about. Are there any workloads that you wouldn't recommend using DRBD with?
Ah, good question. Are there any workloads where we wouldn't recommend using Ginetti? So if you look at our Ginetti homepage, it gives this big scary warning saying, well, you probably don't want to use this for a web server or a database because I/O isn't really great. And I was giving this talk at the New York City Linux group, and someone came up to me and he said, you got to take that warning off because we have a web server and it works great. Your problem is that it doesn't handle a Google scale web server, and no one has a Google scale web server. If it's a small web server, sure, I wouldn't, try to have a billion queries a minute on it. And then the other category, because the disk I/O isn't great, isn't great with DRDB, I wouldn't recommend a heavy-duty database. We have tons of users that run MySQL, and they're very happy. But then we have some users who have tried to have million query a second databases, and it just couldn't keep up, and they've moved to bare metal. That said, that's probably because we only provide DRDB instances on our machine to our customers. If we provided a plain, non-DRDB instances, which you probably would, then we could do that. And in fact, in 2013, one of our goals is to offer to our users our unreliable configuration, which will be, Ginetti, but plain disks instead of DRDB, and then the user has to do their own, replication, which our users are happy to do. So we have a number of people begging us to get this out to them soon. Why is DRDB slower is a good question, and that is because a write is not complete until the write has happened on both the primary and the secondary. So reads are very fast, writes not so much.
And the other question was just, what's your opinion of the GRNet's work on integrating OpenStack with Ginetti?
I'm not familiar with their work. That's actually on my to-do list for Q1 of next year. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I just went, hi, I'm Steve Traugott. These days, just a small family business. I just wanted to add my vote of confidence. Ginetti and DRBD both have saved my tail end so much. Now, granted, I'm just running a small shop these days, and we're running web servers on top of it, and AFS servers, and Kerberos, and MySQL, and it just works.
Wow, thank
you. And because it's a small family business, and I'm the IT department, and I'm out of town for things like this sometimes, it is so nice. It lowers my stress level so much.
That's fantastic. I've thanked you privately,
Tom, but publicly, thank you very much. Well, and everyone else who's been working on this.
I want to thank you for the praise. I also want to deflect it to, you know, I'm not one of the core developers. I've been on the project for just a couple years.
But you're advocating.
And the people like Houston and Guido are deserve so much credit for everything. Thank you.
Patrick Cable, MIT Lincoln. You had touched on...
That's interesting because his business makes cables, and now Patrick Cable is at the mic.
Ooh, I haven't heard that one, so...
Okay.
You had mentioned that all kinds of classes of users and organizations within Google use Ganeti. Does the web interface have any kind of means for allowing self-service for your devs to request, or is that something else that people... kind of bundle in?
That's a good point. I should probably add some slides about that. The Ganeti Web Manager adds some really nice features. It overlays on top of Ganeti
a
user and group concept. So you can say, this group is allowed to use up to this much disk space, CPU, and RAM, and then they can create their own instances self-service. You know, they can make a lot of small ones or one big one, you know, as long as they stay within their quota. You can designate certain people or do role-based access controls, RBAC, to distribute administrative tasks. So not only is it self-service for creation and deletion of instances, but it becomes self-service for administration and it's very, very nice. I highly recommend you use the web manager if you're using Ganeti.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Hello, my name is Charles Baker with Clemson University. I was wondering if those glue pieces that you mentioned, like Virgil and Euripides, is that part of the open source offering as well?
Let me be clear. The Virgil, Euripides, and Dredis are not part of the open source offering. The way they're written, we would like to open source them, but it's really just a glue between Ganeti and the Google inventory systems and stuff. And unless you also have the Google inventory system, it's not really going to be useful for people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Dan Paulus, Bronto Software. You mentioned that with the DRBD, you have to have it written not only locally, but on the other side as well, which is DRBD Protocol C, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you guys actually forced that. Is there a reason why you don't allow us to use A so that it can just be written one side and be sped up that way?
Good question. So we're using DRDB in the slowest, safest mode, the safest mode, which is slow. And your question is, why don't we, if we need performance, why don't we have some users running on the faster, little riskier mode. We figured if we're going to go through all the changes to our provisioning system to have a special instances, then we might as well get good at doing plain instances. I don't know. So I'm not on the part of the team that did the hardware qualifications for that. I don't know if they experimented with it. I'm sure they did because they know DRDB pretty well. The other question that we often get is that DRDB, I think version 9, supports a three-way mirror. And if you notice, when we did those, anytime we moved the secondary storage, we disconnected, then replicated. Why don't we add a third mirror, wait till it's built, and then remove it? And the reason is because internally we're still at version 8 of DRDB. but we would we've been waiting for years for them to add this, and as soon as version 9 gets stable, we'll probably experiment with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Going once, going twice. Okay, thank you very much. Here's our URLs. I hope you experiment with Ganeti and join our community. Thank you very much.